Okay, well, I'm a parent, and I know we've got a lot of parents listening, and it's not just parents, but I know a lot of us are seeking and searching out silence. How can we do that? What's the importance of silence in our life? We're going to talk to Professor Matthias Basner, who's had a really good TED Talk on this recently. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, lovely. Thank you very much. And welcome to Spain, one of the noisiest countries in the world, of course.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Well, there was actually a survey that came out a couple of weeks ago, and I knew this from before. Madrid is one of the noisiest cities in the world, apparently, and Japan and Spain are normally one or second on the list, or sometimes joint first, for the noisiest nations. So we got our work cut out here, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I think it's down to the culture, you know. You can go into a bar and it's very noisy, and just the way the Spanish culture is, and it's really enjoyable in that respect. But it's very, it can be very loud. So this TED Talk we saw was really good, and we really enjoyed it. And maybe just give us a bit of an introduction as to what you were talking about on that particular talk.
Well, it was all about noise and what it does to your health, and what are things that you can do about it to avoid these health effects. And I guess one important distinction is that there are so-called auditory noise effects, that is basically noise-induced hearing loss, and many people actually know about those. That is, if you're exposing yourselves to a noise that is too loud, that may have implications for your hearing in the long run. But then there are also the so-called non-auditory health effects, and not too many people know about those. So these include community annoyance, disturbed communication, but also sleep disturbance, and long-term health consequences like an increased risk for cardiovascular disease, that is like high blood pressure and heart attacks.
Like I say, we know a lot about, well, we think we know a lot about tinnitus and different ear conditions and so on. But this is, I suppose, there's not one person, especially in today's society, that isn't affected by volume and sounds that we have all the time, especially now, as opposed to maybe 300 years ago even.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're just like a heavily industrialized society, with machinery and technology surrounding us everywhere. I mean, I'm just, you know, looking out the window and I'm hearing a car reverting with this beep, beep, beep.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always sound surrounding us. And, you know, to some degree, we don't realize that anymore. And that's also a point I made in my TED Talk, that you only start realizing the noise that constantly surrounds us after you've spent time in an environment that is less noisy. Then you only realize, oh my God, you know, I didn't really know how noisy it is.
Well, I was saying to my producer earlier, I live on the coast and it's a busy place, especially in the summer. Lots of tourists around, music on, cars, so on. And I went about 40 minutes inland to visit a friend who lives on the outskirts of a small town. And it was nighttime and I got out of the car and my ears just felt like they started to relax. It was almost, you could hear the silence, if that makes sense. It was really nice.
Right. And it's actually, you know, there's actually there's a muscle in the ear that is basically adjusting the volume a little bit, or the way how the sound waves are transported to the inner ear. And actually, at some point that muscle can be exhausted.
Wow.
if it's contracting all the time. So, you know, what you just said, you could feel your ear relaxing, maybe. True in a very physiological sense.
And I mean, how often do, like you say, I mean, I'm sitting here in a room and I'm thinking it's relatively quiet, me and you having a conversation, and yet I can hear an air conditioning whirling in the background to keep the equipment cool, from relatively this room is quiet, but compared to other places, it's all relative, isn't it?
It is all relative, and you know, we as humans, the auditory system is actually phenomenal.
Yeah.
So the hearing threshold, like the quietest source that we are just able to perceive, if you think of that source, and then if you add a trillion of those, only at that point do we reach the pain threshold.
Wow.
That is, our auditory system is working at an incredible range, but we as humans also habituate a lot to our environment. in the sense that at some point, you know, we don't really realize it anymore. We just take it for granted, which doesn't mean that there are not pathophysiological processes still going on in the background that we're just not aware of.
Like you say, we acclimatize. What about when we go to sleep? Because we're not conscious of what's going on around us, unless we're woken by the noise, is our ears still working, listening for sounds, even though we're sleeping?
Yeah, actually, the auditory system has really a watchman function. I mean, sleep is a very, like from an evolutionary perspective, is a very dangerous period, or a very dangerous state that we engage in, because we are basically easy prey, right?
Yeah.
And so the auditory system really has a watchman function. It's constantly monitoring our environment for threats, and is even... You know, it's not only about sound pressure levels, but it's really evaluating the actual sounds. As early as in the 1960s, there have been studies where, you know, while somebody was sleeping, different names were played back, and the subject was much more likely to wake up to the name if it was his or her own name.
Wow.
That tells you that, you know, there's still processing going on, and actually an evaluation of the soundscape, and already at the level of the midbrain, a decision is made: is this important enough to wake up the person, or, you know, is it not important enough, and, you know, let the person, you know, sleep and get the recuperation that he or she needs.
Yeah, and what is actually happening? I was saying to my producer Wendy earlier as well. I went to a music concert the other week, and it was fantastic. Rock music came out, my ears were ringing, and you say on your talk there that some of the damage that can be done to an ear is actually permanent.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, what you're experiencing, this ringing in your ear, that is something that we call a temporary threshold shift. So at that point, you know, your ear is not working properly. And, you know, it's called temporary because, you know, that typically goes away. But more and more, what people working in that field are thinking is that damage that you've done to the ear is not temporary at all, but it's very likely permanent. And, you know, with so many things in life, you know, that probably that one rock concert, you know, won't make you deaf or won't cause tinnitus, but it's like a cumulative process.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that repeatedly or on a chronic basis, then you will get the consequences. This is why, you know, noise-induced hearing loss is still the number one occupational health issue. And the number one reason for noise-induced hearing loss, because people in the workplace are basically constantly exposed to the noise. But it's a cumulative process, and very much like obesity. You know, if you eat one big piece of cake, you won't be obese. But if you do it every day, right, you get the consequences.
Yeah. What about I'm listening on the radio to each day. I've got headphones on for a few hours every day. Music, advertising, it's all going in on headphones. What are headphones? Are they dangerous for us long term?
Well, yeah, it's a big issue. Actually, this is what we call social noise exposure. And, you know, just because of, I mean, I still grew up with a Sony Walkman.
Yes.
I'm that old.
I remember that.
But nowadays, everybody has a cell phone, and, you know, basically they're using the cell phone to listen to music all the time, every time. And oftentimes, I think the European Union or WHO or both together came up with new standards for headphones that doesn't make it possible to really increase the noise to a level where it's super damaging to your hearing.
Yeah.
But at the time, it is. And, you know, noise-canceling headphones, it's such a good investment, because what we will do, we always regulate the volume relative to the background noise level. So these noise-canceling headphones, they reduce the background noise level for us. And so that means we can reduce the volume to a level where it's no longer dangerous.
Yeah.
for the ear. So that is, if you ever want to make a good and healthy present to somebody, you know, give them noise-canceling headphones. And I have to disclose that I'm not making any money with noise-canceling headphones.
This interview is sponsored by Sony's.
No.
No, but it's an interesting point, though, because a lot of time you turn the music up to drown out what's going on the headphones. But with these noise-canceling ones, they cancel noise first, so you then can choose the level. That's really good.
Exactly. So the best example is if you've ever like driven on a highway and listened to music, and then you arrive at your destination, get out of the car. 2 hours later, you get into the car, start the car, and then the music system is blasting music at you. It's, you know, it's exactly what you say. You know, we regulated the volume up, and then the auditory system adjusts to that somewhat, and you only realize how loud it was when you get into the car 2 hours later.
Yeah. What about children? You know, I think you mentioned in your talk that certain schools that are in a noisy area, and they're suddenly struggling with their education, unlike maybe a school which is in a more rural area.
Yeah, so there's more and more studies showing that. Children who attend schools in noisy areas are lacking somewhat behind in academic performance relative to their peers who attend schools in less noisy areas. And these studies, you know, adjust for effects of like socio-demographic status, etc. And the mechanism is very likely that really noise in these scenarios disturbs communication. So the teacher may have to raise the voice to be understood, but there may also be a lot of misunderstanding going on between the teacher and the pupils. And, you know, in some extreme scenarios, the teacher may actually have to stop teaching because it's so loud and it doesn't make sense to continue talking. That's something that, you know, we all know from a bar, for example, or a restaurant. I had an encounter in one restaurant where it really didn't make sense anymore to try to talk to my wife because it was so loud. You know? And I read that some restaurants do that on purpose because then you consume more food and more drinks because, you know, you have no time to talk anymore.
Sometimes it annoys me, especially here, and I love Spain, I love this country, but they have the television on in the background while you're trying to talk in a bar, or the music's too loud. And I think... maybe I'm getting old. I don't know what it is. But I used to like loud music.
It is actually true. You know, the noise-induced hearing loss at age makes it harder to attend to a conversation if there's a lot of background noise. So it's true that getting older is one aspect of it. But I totally agree with you. Actually, I enjoy listening to loud music once in a while too. And I don't think, you know, a rock concert and everything that is fun, and it is truly a great experience. And you know, as a noise effects researcher, I'm not saying we should like get rid of all of that, but just bring it down to a reasonable level. For example, you know, if you're in the cinema and you know they're trying to blast you out of the seat, just, you know, go outside and complain about it. And if they won't lower the noise levels, just leave and demand a refund. Or if there's a, you know, there's a DJ at your child's school, and that DJ is deaf already, and the volume is so excessively loud. Again, you know, loud in and of itself is not bad, but if it's excessively loud, up to a degree where it's really uncomfortable and you cannot like have a normal conversation anymore, at that point it's really too loud.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, isn't it? And also, we should be, I suppose, when we're looking to buy a house, this should be one of our priorities, really, shouldn't it, about the sound from the road or whatever's going on outside?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it should be a priority. And actually, when you talk to a realtor, oftentimes you get these information sheets that has all the information, what the taxes are going to be and whatever. But really, the noise level should be one criterion too. And, you know, I urge people to, if you really, especially if you want to buy a house, which is like typically a long-term decision, you know, to visit the property at different times of the day because the noise level can really change. Also, you know, depending on weekday or weekend, talk to the neighbors about noise. And really make that a priority because, you know, once you buy a house, you may be living in that house for 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're constantly exposed to the noise, and that in the end can wreak havoc on your health.
Now, we've had a WhatsApp message come in from Roger, one of our listeners on the Costa Blanca, and it's something that really I do this. Is it bad to sleep with the radio on?
Oh man,
I think the answer is yes. I think that.
Well, it's a tough question. I mean, you know, I'm not only a noise researcher. I'm only a sleep researcher, and you know, we talk about a good sleep hygiene. Yes. That is, you know, how what should you do before you go to bed during the day? For example, you shouldn't like consume caffeine too close to bedtime. No. But also, how is your bedroom supposed to be? And you know, it should be dark. It should be quiet. And it should be cold, but not too cold. So, you know, in general, I would say, you know, having the radio run is not a great idea. But we have done studies here in the United States in people's homes, and it's really astonishing how many people have the TV or the radio running in the background. And you know, some of them, these people may actually use it to mask out other sounds. So if you have, and there's actually, you know, there's like sound machines out there that are marketed to help promote people's sleep, just trying to, you know, get a like more or less constant background sound level in the back room to mask out any noise that is intruding into the back the bedroom. And there's, you know, I mean that. In theory, that makes a lot of sense, but there is really not, in my view, there's not enough research out there for me to confidently say that that is either good or bad.
Yeah, so for instance, like on YouTube, you can play on YouTube the noise of an aeroplane, like a jumbo jet or whatever, and some people sleep better, or some people sleep with the noise of the fan in the, you know, to keep cool, of course, in the summer, but you get so used to the noise that you find it easier to sleep with that noise. It's very strange.
Right. The thing is, again, we have that disconnect between, you know, your subjective assessment of sleep and the objective assessment. So there, although you are, you know, you are sleeping, perhaps you're not sleeping as deeply, and that's something that you don't realize that we would only be able to find out if we really put electrodes on you. So there may, it may actually come at a cost, having the radio run or having those sound machines running. There's simply not enough research there right now for us to conclude whether it's good or bad, and there might also be huge inter-individual differences. But it's true, you know, people get used to their environment. We actually had, this is an anecdote, but somebody living close to a rail track, actually, there was always like a 5 a.m. train, and one night that train wasn't coming, and the subject woke up and said, you know, something's wrong here. So it's the other way around. Right?
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, unfortunately, Matthias, but if anybody wants to find out more about you, the TED Talk is on, I think it's on YouTube, it's also on the TED Talk website as well. Have you got a website that people can visit as well?
Yeah, it's at the University of Pennsylvania. Just Google my name and you'll find me.
Lovely. And I'm going to play the song that you mentioned in the TED Talk, which is The Sound of Silence by Simon & Garfunkel. Thank you very much for coming on, Matthias.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Thank you. And have a good night's sleep tonight. Thank you very much. Really good.